This is not about money. There is enough money to bail out Argentina with $20 billion. There is enough money to purchase a brand new aircraft for $173 million for the Homeland Security Secretary. There is enough money to renovate the White House ballroom. What there's not enough money for under this Republican government is you. There's not enough money for you.
Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast. As heard on KPFK, thank you. KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us here today. I'll tell you what, we do a lot of things on the Bradcast. Would you agree, Desi Doyen? Are you there to agree?
Yes, I am.
There you go. We do a lot of things. We cover, Desi is, of course, our producer. We cover the news, breaking, broken or otherwise. We rant about the news every now and again. We do deep dive interviews with experts on all manner of related issues. For example, last week, if you missed them, my conversation with election security expert Susan Greenhall regarding the surprise purchase announced last week of the nation's second largest voting machine company, Dominion, by a new company named Liberty Vote, which happens to be owned by a Republican partisan Trump ally. That's cool, huh? Or my interview with former NOAA meteorologist and climate scientist Tom DiLiberto, who was pushed out of NOAA. We had a great conversation about the Trump administration removing critical climate-related databases from NOAA's website and how scientists at climatecentral.org are resurrecting many of those databases and their important data. You can download both of those interviews, of course, at bradblog.com. I will, as noted, occasionally offer my take on the news. We often speak with various pundits about the political aspects of the news regarding all manner of things. But the one thing I don't think that we have ever done is become a game show. So, yeah. Why not? Let's open up the phones in a little bit to let you play what I'm going to call Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen? And the good news is you do not have to be a non-citizen to play. In fact, I would love to see if some of our U.S. citizens can answer some of the questions now being asked by the Trump administration as part of its new test for those hoping to become U.S. citizens here. Our number, if you want to line up now, will be, as usual, 818-985-5735. If you are in our live Southern California listening area or listening anywhere across the world over our kpfk.org live web stream. That's 818-985-KPFK. But we need to begin here today briefly, as I suspect this story will be one that continues, unfortunately, throughout the week. Hurricane Melissa continued strengthening on Sunday night, and into Monday it reached Category 5 intensity as it approaches Jamaica, where, according to meteorologists, it is set to deliver a devastating blow when it makes landfall late on Monday into the early morning hours on Tuesday, I believe. Rain is forecast to fall in torrents right now, as the storm is already, the outer bands are already on the island, but rain is expected to fall in torrents totaling as much as 40 inches in the mountains. That will result in catastrophic flash flooding and landslides, storm surge of up to 9 to 13 feet as well. Large waves are expected to inundate areas near the south coast where the storm makes landfall. As of Monday morning, the storm had sustained winds of 160 miles per hour as it slogs towards Jamaica's main island, crawling west at 3 miles per hour. It will likely make landfall as the country's strongest storm ever on record, surpassing Hurricane Gilbert back in 1988, and may not be done strengthening yet. In fact, on Sunday night, satellite intensity estimates for Melissa jumped off the charts, provisionally reaching never-before-observed wind speeds of 190 miles per hour in the Atlantic Basin. Meteorologist Michael Lowry wrote on Sunday night, quote, "We're witnessing satellite history in the Atlantic tonight." Melissa also became the third hurricane of the Atlantic season to reach Category 5 strength and the second most of three Category 5 storms is the second most of any season on record. Though in truth, while the wind speeds are horrifying, it's actually the speed of the storm itself, or frankly, the lack thereof, moving at just 3 miles per hour, which has me the most worried. Yet the winds are horrific, but because of the glacial pace of the storm itself, we could see an unprecedented amount of rain dumped onto Jamaica as the storm just barely moves across the island. It may take days to cross in full. And then other islands to the north, including Cuba, the Bahamas, the Turks and Caicos Islands, and possibly Bermuda, could be hit as well. But for the moment, Jamaica is apparently right in the target for this horrific storm, Desi Doyen. I know you're following this for our Green News report tomorrow, of
yes.
course, but what's jumping out at you about this storm at the moment?
Well, the fact that it is basically a worst-case scenario for Jamaica. Meteorologist Bob Henson of Yale warns that if the current forecasts hold, Melissa will be the most powerful hurricane ever to strike Jamaica, and the National Hurricane Center is warning that the catastrophic wind damage from those Category 5 winds, up to 40 inches of rain. Mm-hmm. Now, for most people, that's 3 feet of rain. That's more than 3 feet of rain in a short time. That's going to cause catastrophic flooding and landslides, and as you mentioned, exacerbated by the slow movement across Jamaica's mountainous terrain. In addition to the rainfall flooding, there's also going to be storm surge of as much as 13 feet, which will damage critical infrastructure that is located in the southern part of Jamaica, like its international airport and its power plants. And Melissa is already impacting Jamaica. It has already killed at least 8 people across the Caribbean, in Haiti, the Dominican Republic, in Jamaica. The Jamaican government has opened more than 650 shelters. Mandatory evacuations are underway. Now, the National Hurricane Center warns that the damage to the infrastructure and communications in Jamaica is very likely to be extensive. It could isolate communities across the island after the storm. It could become a major humanitarian crisis very quickly. Outbreaks of disease from flooding, from sewage contamination, of drinking water, from breeding grounds, from mosquitoes, all of those will pose secondary impacts once Melissa passes over and the cleanup in Jamaica begins. And just want to point out, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Agency, NOAA, and the National Weather Service scientists and the Hurricane Hunter flight crew, they are all working without pay right now to monitor what's happening with
they're
the storm.
Flying into storms, not being paid. Maybe
Correct.
Later, we'll pay you later, but right now they're doing this.
Correct.
Well, thank God.
And now I also want to add all of the inputs of climate change to here. It's driven by the burning of fossil fuels. We've got record hot ocean waters fueling the storm and intensifying the rainfall and raising the sea levels, which is increasing storm surge. With climate change fueling stronger storms and higher rainfall totals, climate scientist Liv Stevens in the UK said this is a stark example for other countries as to what may be in store for them. And the stalling of Melissa over the island is also linked to climate change. Warming in the Arctic, that is, slowing down, altering the course of the jet stream, which drives weather systems across the U.S. So that is slowing down the jet stream and helping these storms stall in place, dumping more rain, much like Hurricane Harvey did back in 2017.
In Houston.
Yes.
I guess what we can call the good news here is it's not currently projected to hit the U.S. Melissa is not currently projected to hit the U.S. mainland.
Correct.
The storm is forecast to pass near Bermuda on Friday as it accelerates in speed into the North Atlantic, where it's expected to dissipate once it finally hits cooler water. But around the same time as it passes Bermuda, some of Melissa's moisture is going to be sort of sucked into a separate storm from the Mid-Atlantic to Atlantic Canada on Thursday and Friday, with heavy rain because of it and wind that expected to lash areas from D.C. to Boston up into Canada. So, happy Halloween, East Coast. Stay safe out there in the week ahead. Meanwhile, here at home, Hurricane Donald continues to lash the entire nation, now including threatening food assistance to hungry Americans, millions of which, whether he seems to understand it or not, voted for him last November. More than 40 million low-income food assistance beneficiaries are expected to see their help cut off next week, perhaps entirely as of the 1st of November. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is threatening to withhold billions of dollars in contingency funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, which Congress has already allocated for emergency scenarios if the government shuts down, if that shutdown stretches into November. Given that Trump and congressional Republicans are currently refusing to even negotiate with Democrats who are attempting to reverse enormous cuts by the Republicans to health care, to the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, to Medicaid, to Medicare, as of year's end, what is now the second longest shutdown in U.S. history is likely to stretch into November, overtaking the longest shutdown in U.S. history, which occurred, well, the last time that Trump was in office. There is between $5 billion and $6 billion currently in the SNAP Emergency Contingency Fund. It was appropriated by Congress. It could be spent here, but last Friday, the USDA released guidance saying that it will not use those funds to cover SNAP benefits if the government shutdown extends beyond October 31. Why? Well, because apparently the Trump administration thinks that hunger for millions of Americans is a great political tactic to use against Democrats to force them to vote in favor of opening the government with trillions of dollars in Republican cuts to health care, even though, by the way, Republicans could vote to reopen the government all by themselves. They don't need any Democrats if they really want to reopen the government, because they control both chambers of Congress and the White House. The USDA claims it would be illegal to use the SNAP contingency funds for anything other than an emergency, like a natural disaster. Which, if true, and Democrats are not buying it, well, it's a fine time for the administration to decide it suddenly needs to follow the rule of law. And that certainly wasn't the case just last week when Trump took money allocated by Congress for something else in order to pay U.S. military troops. Yes, that was also unlawful. It did not stop the administration, the Trump administration. And they also, by the way, reportedly accepted about $130 million from one of Trump's wealthy donors, supposedly to aid that already unlawful effort unlawfully. The memo from the USDA on Friday, however, contradicts the shutdown that the USDA had in place earlier this year, which said that the department is legally obligated to pay SNAP benefits even in the event of a shutdown. That policy from earlier this year from the USDA read, quote, "Congressional intent is evident that SNAP's operation should continue since the program has been provided with multi-year contingency funds that can be used for state expenses to ensure that states can also continue operating during a federal government shutdown," unquote. But that plan has since been deleted. Brooke Rollins, the secretary of the USDA, instead has said in recent days that the burden is on Senate Democrats to liberate funds by voting to end the shutdown. So, yeah, they are using hunger now as a policy to try and hurt their Democratic adversaries in order to force them to agree to cut health care for tens of millions of Americans.
Yeah, so Trump and Republicans have been finding every conceivable way to plunder funds and redirect them to the things that they aren't appropriated for. But now they say that, oh, money set aside for to feed the poorest people, that
right.
and the government shutdown, oh, that's just untouchable. You can't
right.
do
can't
that.
Can't do it. Unlawful.
And I believe that Jesus had some things to say about punishing the poor and refusing to help them. So I would like to hear the congressional Republicans who claim to be such very strong Christians explain how that works.
Boy, talk about citing a higher authority. Well done.
Yeah.
And you're right. Now, Secretary Rollins knows what is going to happen. She just doesn't care. She said, she told reporters, you're talking about millions and millions of vulnerable families, hungry families that are going to have to access going to have access to those programs cut off because of this shutdown. So she knows what's going to happen. She knows that she is legally allowed to use that funding because her own agency earlier in this year said that they were legally obligated to do so. Democrats and other SNAP supporters have denounced that shift, saying that the law is very clear. USDA must release the contingency funds. They're called contingency funds for a reason. And they're hammering the administration for not acting sooner to ensure that these benefits don't run out. Quote, it could have and should have taken steps weeks ago to be ready to use these funds, said Sharon Parrott, the head of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, in a statement. Instead, it may choose not to use them in an effort to gain political advantage, she said. It's unclear, however, how much of an advantage this actually gives Republicans, given that millions of their own voters rely on SNAP, or what we used to call food stamps. Donald Trump has said that the shutdown impasse provides him a, quote, unprecedented opportunity to slash programs that he doesn't like. In fact, it doesn't, but he's doing it anyway, and he's made clear that he's targeting those initiatives favored by Democrats, saying, quote, we're only cutting Democrat programs, I hate to tell you. In fact, that's not the case. So I guess supplemental nutrition for low-income Americans is now a Democrat program. Apparently, that's what jerks like, oh, I don't know, Republican lawyer Mike Davis, formerly chief counsel of nominations in the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee and a law clerk for Justice Neil Gorsuch. That's what he seems to believe. In response to this article that I'm sharing parts of from The Hill, this disgusting racist creep, Mike Davis, posted on social media, quote, we should only help people who can't help themselves. It's outrageous that 40 million people get food stamps. Get off your fat ghetto asses, he said. Get a job, he said. Stop reproducing, Mike Davis said. Change your bleeping culture. Stop giving food stamps to immigrants. We don't want you here if you won't work. Now, in truth, that's kind of representative of how Republicans, at least those in Washington or positions of power, seem to view the SNAP program. But for the record, SNAP is designed to supplement income, to not replace it. So many working families qualify for SNAP. In fact, more than 70% of SNAP beneficiaries are employed or were employed at some point over this past year. But many of them work for companies, huge companies like Walmart or McDonald's, who do not pay them a living wage, so they need supplemental assistance to feed themselves and their families. The largest racial group, for the record, the largest since this jerk is talking about your fat ghetto asses, the largest racial group to accept SNAP, since that sleaze Mike Davis doesn't seem to get it, are actually white people. Just thought you should know. And as noted, tens of millions of those recipients voted Republican last year. But maybe not next year. We will see how it goes. Democratic House Leader Hakeem Jeffries told reporters on Friday, quote, "That's the largest SNAP cut in American history." He was referring to what Republicans did in their so-called Big Beautiful Bill when they already cut SNAP benefits by an estimated $186 billion in that so-called Big Beautiful Bill. People are to believe right now that Republicans actually care about hunger when they rip food away for the mouths of hungry children, seniors, families, women, and veterans to provide mass tax breaks to their billionaire donors. Asked Jeffries, get lost with that, he said. The American people are not buying it. As the House Ag Committee Democrats tweeted on Friday, quote, "After cutting $186 billion from SNAP, Republicans shut down the government and put assistance at risk for 42 million Americans. Congress provided funding for exactly this kind of emergency." They said Secretary Rollins must use those funds and legal authority to ensure benefits can go out in November. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz had a similar message when he was asked about the USDA cutting off SNAP benefits on Monday.
Just so you know the scope and the scale of this, those are Minnesota tax dollars that went to the federal government. Again, one of a handful of states that pays more in than we get back. I want to be very clear. USDA, during this shutdown, has contingency funds that they could release just like us. They are choosing not to. They are choosing not to. And I can paint any damn picture you want for you. They're paying contractors to tear down the East Wing, but they're not putting money into the food bank that they're setting on. So if there's a sense of frustration in America, it's very real. Food insecurity is real. The system that we've developed keeps people out of poverty, keeps them out of hunger, improves their quality of life, improves their health, and lets them participate in our society. And when this risk comes, it puts a lot of children, a lot of seniors, and a lot of folks with disabilities at risk by a choice. They are choosing not to fund these programs. They are choosing to prioritize. And when the White House press secretary said the top priority is the ballroom, we could not disagree more.
Yeah. So, you know, we will see, as Hakeem Jeffries argues that the American people are not buying what the Republicans are selling here. We will see if they are buying it or not. So far, in poll after poll, Americans continue to blame the Republicans and Donald Trump more than Democrats for the shutdown. Those numbers, I suspect, are about to get much worse if people are not able to feed their families soon as of November 1 and when health care cuts also really come home, as is also now beginning to happen as we enter the open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act marketplace or the Obamacare exchanges. People are beginning to find out how their health care costs are about to spike due to the GOP cuts to health care. On that front, I'll note, I am self-employed, and therefore I use the Obamacare exchange out here in California. It's called Covered California, which, by the way, is one of the better exchanges in the country. I use that to purchase my health care insurance. I just received notice myself on Friday that my monthly premiums will, in fact, be increasing as of January 1, unless something is done here. By well more than double, by almost 150% over what I was paying each month over the past year. I suspect I'm hardly the only one getting those notices right about now and wondering how we are going to afford health care next year if Republicans do not restore the funding that they have now cut. In exchange for $1 trillion in tax cuts for rich people, which is why Democrats will not help Republicans to pass a budget right now, at least until those massive health care cuts are restored. Speaking of California, by the by, the Justice Department has long used federal election monitors to help protect voting rights, particularly in jurisdictions with a history of racial discrimination at the polling place. But the announcement by the Trump DOJ on Friday of where and why monitors are being dispatched for next week's November 4 election are alarming election experts who find no legal basis for whatever the hell it is that Donald Trump is doing. In response to supposed requests from state Republican parties, the DOJ announced plans on Friday to send federal election monitors to California and New Jersey ahead of November's election. Both states, I will note, have Democratic governors, while Virginia, with a Republican governor, has arguably the largest election coming up on Tuesday, with their entire House of Delegates up for grabs, along with their governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, et cetera. But Trump Department of Justice is not apparently sending federal officials to monitor elections in Virginia. Go figure. As Kaya Himmelman of TPM reports, although election monitors are not necessarily unusual under appropriate circumstances, experts are raising questions about this specific announcement, including which federal law the DOJ is purportedly enforcing in sending its monitors out to California and New Jersey, and about the qualifications of the observers who will be here. Both California and New Jersey are holding closely watched elections with high stakes for the MAGA coalition. California currently has a redistricting proposal on the ballot that would allow Democrats to redraw the state's congressional maps to partially offset Republicans' mid-decade gerrymanders in states like Texas, North Carolina, and Missouri in recent weeks. And New Jersey has an open governor's seat and a tight race for it between Democratic former Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill and former state assemblyman and businessman Republican Jack Cittarelli. According to the Justice Department, the goal of this purported monitoring is to, quote, protect the votes of eligible American citizens. It says it will monitor six jurisdictions, including a key swing county in northern New Jersey and five counties here in southern and central California. New Jersey Attorney General Matt Platkin, in a statement Friday, said, quote, the Trump Department of Justice's announcement that it is sending federal election monitors, that's in quotes, to Passaic County is highly inappropriate, and the Department of Justice has not even attempted to identify a legitimate basis for its actions. Meanwhile, for some reason out here in California, five different counties have been named to be overseen by the DOJ for reasons not explained, and it's frankly unclear who they're going to even be sending here. Traditionally, it's lawyers, attorneys from the Civil Rights Division, from the voting section. Well, most of them have been either pushed out or have been fired or have quit. So it's unclear who is even going to show up in California to monitor the polls and what it is they are exactly going to be doing. Legal scholar and UCLA law professor Rick Hassan characterized all of this on social media as a, quote, test run for 2026. California Governor Gavin Newsom had a similar take as he released a video statement in response to this news on Friday, noting how unusual it is that these are not even federal elections here in California, that the DOJ is vowing to monitor somehow a statewide state election for a state constitutional ballot measure, and that what Trump is trying to do is, quote, rig the election, says the governor.
So today, the Trump administration announced they're sending election monitors to five specific counties here in the state of California. They have no business doing that. They have no basis to do that. In fact, we have a statewide election for a statewide constitution. This is about voter intimidation. This is about voter suppression, period, full stop. And it's a pattern, isn't it? It's consistent with what they've done with the federalization of the National Guard and the intimidation and the chill that that's created. They'll do that right around Election Day as well. Same thing with ICE and Border Patrol, masked men. Watch that space showing up in and around polling booths and voting places. But this is a bridge too far. And I hope people understand it's a bridge that they're trying to build, the scaffolding for all across this country in next November's election. They do not believe in fair and free elections. Our republic, our democracy is on the line. We all need to wake up.
That was California Governor Gavin Newsom responding to the DOJ threat, is maybe the right word, of sending poll observers out here to California, where, by the way, most of our voting is done by mail. So let's use this as an opportunity to remind you that, yeah, Election Day is Tuesday, November 4th. In Virginia, in New Jersey, in New York City, and elsewhere, including here in California, where Prop 50 asks voters if they would like to temporarily set aside the state's U.S. House map created by our Independent Redistricting Commission in order to enact a new U.S. House map for now that is likely to flip as many as five red seats, five seats held by Republican folks to blue in next year's midterms in response originally to the Texas legislatures, not the state voters, but the legislature in Texas, to them adopting a new U.S. House map this summer to flip five blue seats in the Lone Star State to red. That at the demand of Donald Trump, who, well, justifiably fears that his party will lose control of Congress next year, majority control. So if you are registered to vote here in California, you have likely received a vote-by-mail ballot already in the mail. If you have yet to vote with that ballot, please do so. And either put it in the mailbox ASAP, or at this point I would recommend dropping it off at a drop box or a county voting headquarters directly. If you did not get a ballot for any reason, because you lost your house, for example, in the wildfires earlier this year, or you are not registered to vote yet, etc., or you misplaced the one that was mailed to you recently, well, you can find a voting center near you, and you can both register and vote at the very same time. I suspect there will be no lines at all. There's only one item on the ballot. You should, in most places, you should be able to go right in, register, and cast that vote. Do it now, or at least do it no later than Tuesday, November 4. But yeah, now is a good time.
And remember that these voting centers are all over the county. You don't have to go to the place nearest to you. So if you have concerns about a voting center in your particular neighborhood, you can go to a different voting center.
Yep, you sure can. Just get out and vote. It won't take you but a second. All right, let's take a quick break. And we will come back with our game show. Who wants to be a U.S. citizen? We'll need you to call in if you want to play. However, it don't cost you anything. And the prize, well, we'll talk about the prize after the break. Give me a call, 818-985-5735. It's easy. It's fun, says me. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
We're playing those mind games together. Yes, we are. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Let's play some of those mind games together, shall we? If you'd like to play our new Bradcast game show called Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen? Or maybe Are You Smarter Than a Non-Citizen? I don't know. We haven't figured out a name yet here. But if you want to play, I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call right now, 818-985-5735, if you are in our live Southern California listening area, or if you're listening anywhere around the world via the kpfk.org live web stream. Give me a call, 818-985-KPFK. Now, don't worry, you do not have to be a non-U.S. citizen to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen. Citizens, non-citizens alike are welcome, especially, in fact, citizens, because I'm really curious to see if you, longtime citizens out there, can answer some of the questions that the Trump administration is now asking on their newly reconfigured test for those applying to become U.S. citizens. One part of the test taken to obtain citizenship in the U.S. has now become, well, more difficult thanks to the Trump administration. Test takers must now answer twice the number of questions, and they have to get twice as many correct. Among the changes are an increase in the number of questions asked from 10 to 20, and now a minimum of 12 questions must be answered correctly. That doubles the previous requirement of 6 answers to pass. Alongside the civics portion of the test, those hoping to become citizens in the country must show that they can read, write, speak, and understand English, by the way, which I guess, lucky for me, was not a requirement when my family came to this country back in the early part of the 20th century, or I would not be here right now. Quote, we need to make it a little bit more challenging, said Joseph Edlow. That's Trump's chief of the USCIS last month. He said, we've got to make sure that people are actually understanding what it means to be a U.S. citizen, what it means to get that benefit. He said in a news release last week that the USCIS is updating the naturalization civics test in an effort to, quote, ensure proper assimilation of lawful immigrants into the U.S. and promote a unified American identity and attachment to the Constitution, the laws, and the founding principles of the United States, whatever unified American identity might mean. So Washington Post asked an interesting question in response. Can you pass the new U.S. citizenship test? And they listed a number of the questions, and I thought, well, man, these sound actually pretty difficult. I wonder if the president of the United States could answer these questions, much less people signing up to become citizens. And then I wondered, well, how about citizens themselves? Can they answer these questions? Well, let's give it a try. We'll ask a few of questions here. We don't really have rules. We'll see. If you'd like to play the game, give us a call, 818-985-5735. I'll ask you a question. We'll see how it goes. If you get it right, your prize will be that, well, I'll maybe ask you another question and see how well you do. If you get it wrong, well, that may be it for you. We might have to dump you. No citizenship for you. But we will just see how it goes. Like the Trump administration, I'm just sort of making up stuff as I go. 818-985-KPFK. Let's play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen? We'll start with Mike in Leanna Valley. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast. How are you, sir? Do we have you? Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Do we have you?
The other thing I would comment on, the other day I was down at Walmart here in Palmdale.
Yeah.
And the lady out there, you know, taking petition signatures and stuff. It was about California driver's license registration for a voter to be able to vote in California. And I was wondering, and I started to think, well, suppose there are people here that do not have a driver's license. Was that extended on to people that have a California ID? Is that right? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not sure the question that you're asking, but in truth, Mike, this time I'm supposed to be asking you a question. Do you want to take a question? Do you want to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen? Mike?
Well, I think a person that's been here for a number of years should be a citizen of this California state. That's the way I feel about that.
All right. Well, here's a question for you. And then we'll let you go. Can you name, this is a question that you would have to answer if you were going to applying to become a U.S. citizen. Name one power, Mike, that is only for the U.S., only for the federal government. Can you do that?
The power to vote?
No, I'm sorry. That is not one of the powers for the federal government. They can print paper money, mint coins, declare war, create an army, make treaties, set foreign policy, etc. But the U.S. government itself does not vote. Thank you for playing. Thank you for your effort there, Mike. I appreciate it. 818-985-5735. Let's just go down the line here. Let me go to Harold in Santa Barbara. Hey, Harold, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Do we have Harold there? There we go.
Hello?
Harold, can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah, now I can.
Okay. Do you want to play our quiz?
Yes, but I want to change my...
You want to change your what?
I want to change my name to protect the guilty.
Oh, okay. What shall we call you, Harold?
Call me Ronald McDonald.
Okay, no, Ronald. Sorry. Here we go, Ronald. You're out. Turn off your blender there, Ronald. Okay, the first question for you. What are three rights of everyone living in the United States? Can you name three rights?
Oh, man. Bong the gong. I don't know.
You can't name us. How about a single right? Can you name a single right?
Freedom of speech.
No, that's the right answer. Wendell. There we go. Thank you very much, sir. You got that one right. All right, I'm gonna ask you another one now, Ronald. What is one part of the judicial branch? As that plane flies over you, what is one part of the judicial branch? Can you name it?
The Justice Department. Oops.
Nope, I'm sorry. That's not correct. Thank you, Ronald. Bye-bye. The judicial branch is made up of the Supreme Court and the federal courts. That, at least according to the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Agency. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Let's see if Madeline, these men are not doing well here. Madeline, welcome to the broadcast. Where are you calling from?
Thank you. I live in Altadena, Pasadena area, L.A. County.
Okay. Were you okay after the fires?
Well, I'm Letty. I'm south of the burn, but I can't live in my actual house. I have a front and a back, and the back house where I live had open windows, and it's got too much lead. I have to empty it out so I can have lead abatement, which is going to be, we'll see how that goes.
Yikes. And one of the things I was concerned about is for people in the burned out areas not getting their ballots for Prop 50. Did you, in fact, were you able to get yours by the mail?
I have a ballot, and I can't go out today, but I think I'm going to find it, fill it, and drop it off because I did look all, and it was really kind of far. Like, I cannot comfortably walk to the ballot pickup place, which is too bad because it should have been able that I should have been able to walk there.
Well, if you want, I believe you can give it to a friend or a family member to drop off for you at a, at a mailbox
drive.
Or drive.
I'll drive.
Dropbox.
I'll drive
okay.
there.
Excellent.
But it's just,
thank you.
Yeah.
Do you want to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen?
Yes, please.
All right. Here we go, Madeline. During the Cold War, what was one main concern of the United States?
One main concern of imperialism of the Soviet Union.
Let's see. Well, they list communism and the nuclear war, but imperialism of the of the Soviet Union. Judges? There we go. Well done, Madeline. All right, you got one in a row. Nicely done.
Thank you.
Yes.
Support the station.
Well, hang on. Do you want another question? Because you're entitled to
go
one.
For it.
Having
yes,
answered.
Please.
Okay. All right.
Yes,
very good.
Please.
What's the name of the national anthem?
The Star Spangled Banner.
There we go.
This
very good.
Scotty.
Two in a row.
English drinking song.
Let's keep going. The nation's first motto was E Pluribus Unum. What does that mean?
Of many one.
Man, you are good, Madeline. I'm pretty sure you're going to be a citizen soon. Let's keep going. If we can get to six, you'll be a citizen. What does the Bill of Rights protect?
Well, it protects the rights of the people.
There we go. Are we up to four? Des, are we up to four? You counting? Okay, four. Why is the Declaration of Independence important, Madeline?
Well, it was brought together the colonies at the time to say something together that they wanted to not be part of the English, the British Empire.
I think that works. The answers that are given by the Citizenship and Immigration Services, it says America is free from British control is one of the reasons they would accept. It says all people are created equal. It identifies inherent rights. It identifies individual freedoms. I say, there we go. Well done, Madeline.
Thank you. Wow.
All right. One more and you become a citizen. Do you want to take your final question?
Sure.
Okay.
I think the families that have been here for a long time should have all the same rights, because in the whatever it is, Constitution or Declaration of Independence, it says persons, not citizens. There, I'll stop and listen.
You're right. You're correct. Here we go. The Federalist Papers supported the passage of the U.S. Constitution. Can you name one of the writers of the Federalist Papers? And this...
Hamilton. Alexander Hamilton.
Alexander Hamilton. That is correct. If this were the test prior to the changes made, you would be allowed to be a citizen at this point. So, well done. You answered six. Now you'd have to answer 12, but we're going to go under the old rules and allow you to remain a citizen, Madeline. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All
Thank
right.
you very much.
You bet. Well done. 818-985-5735 is our phone number if you want to join Madeline as our first citizen remaining. We won't have to deport her. Let me go to Jonathan in Pomona. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the broadcast. Would you like to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen?
Yes, sir.
All right, Jonathan. Here we go. Oh, sounds like he's next to that same airport that our previous caller. All right. Name one power of the U.S. Congress, Jonathan. Jonathan, are you there? Name one power of the U.S. Congress. Did we lose Jonathan? Oh, Jonathan, do we lose him? I think we lost him. All right, Jonathan, if you're there, hang on. We will try to get back to you. Let me go to Laura in San Gabriel Valley. There we go. Hey, Laura, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
All right, do you want to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen?
Yeah, and one power of the Congress is the power to declare war. The president doesn't have that power.
Well done. That is one power of Congress. We're going to go ahead and give you that. So let's move on to the next question. The president of the United States can only serve two terms. Why?
Because after Roosevelt served three terms, they amended the Constitution to give the president term limits. And it had been customary since George Washington had declined additional terms.
Excellent. I say that's a winner. Very good. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services says the two acceptable answers are because of the 22nd Amendment and to keep the president from becoming too powerful. Now, I don't know if Donald Trump knows about that particular question, but he damn well should read it, and he should read it soon. Okay, here's a tough one for you, Laura, because you're pretty good at this. What is the purpose of the 10th Amendment?
Oh, the 10th Amendment. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So that was one of that was from the original Bill of Rights?
The 10th Amendment would have been from the original Bill of Rights because there was 10 of them. So well done there.
Yeah.
But that's not the
Well, you got
answer.
Me stumped. Was it voting?
It was. No, unfortunately, it wasn't. So that was, we're going to have to let you go on that. But the 10th Amendment states that the powers not given to the federal government belong to the states.
To the state.
There you go. Or the people. That was a very tough one. I don't blame you for getting it wrong. But, you know, there's a whole lot of people who want to be U.S. citizens who, that's a question that even citizens are going to have trouble answering. So anyway, well done, Laura. Nice try. But I'm sorry, you don't get to be a U.S. citizen today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for playing. Appreciate that. 818-985-5735. Do I have that clear? There we go. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Jonathan is back. Let's try to see if we can get with Jonathan here. Hey, Jonathan, are you back?
Yes, sir. I'm back.
Okay. You want to take some? You want to play? Who wants to be a U.S. citizen?
I would love to. It seems like the previous people got a little bit more of the easier questions, but I'm down to try.
Oh, do you want some easy? You want an easy question?
No. By all means, any questions.
All right, here we go. The American Revolution had many important events. Name one of them.
Ooh, that is a very good question. I would say one of the most important moments of the American Revolution was the lead-up, which was the what was the massacre that killed like 13 people. I forgot what it was. Got me there.
Yeah. Oh, that's a shame. You even called back. You know, I think we ought to. Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go. There we go. They would accept the Battle of Bunker Hill, the Declaration of Independence, the Washington crossing the Delaware, the Battle of Saratoga, Valley Forge, Battle of Yorktown.
Darn it.
Yeah, no, I know. But you know what? Since you called back, let me give you a second one. What founding document was written in 1787?
1787. I believe that was the Articles of Confederation? Or the Articles of...
That was the U.S. Constitution. You might have heard of it, Jonathan, but that, in fact, was a founding document that was written in 1787. Excellent effort, though, Jonathan, and you deserve credit just for getting through our phone system twice in a row. So, well done, sir.
Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Dave in Huntington Beach. Hey, Dave, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, thank you so much.
Would you like to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen?
Yes, please.
Do you think Donald Trump could answer the questions, by the way? This isn't an official question. Do you think he could have answered most of the questions I've asked so far here today?
No, not at all.
Okay. Dave, when did all men get the right to vote?
All men. Ooh.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We ran out of time there.
Post-Civil War time?
Oh!
I don't know.
Yeah, post-Civil War. That'll count. We'll accept that. Go ahead. There we go. We have now changed the record, and you're in. Dave, well done. Let me ask it, which means I get to ask you another one. What amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the U.S. and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are U.S. citizens?
13th or 14th?
Boy, he's really pushing his luck. Yes, it is actually the 14th Amendment, so we're going to give you credit just because I'm in a generous mood. And I'm sort of the president here, so I get to do whatever the hell I please. I have complete and total immunity. But, you know, you're sort of halvesies there, so we're going to give you one more here. Name one leader of the women's rights movement in the 1800s.
Whoa, man. I'm just thinking of my anarchist lady from the 1920s. I forget her name, but no, I don't have this one. Sorry.
Okay, sorry about that. It was an excellent try, a yeoman's effort, Dave. You answered sort of two questions out of three, so we're going to call that one answer out of three. But very brave of you, and much appreciate you joining us to play Who Wants to Be a U.S. Citizen? Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, sir.
All right, appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob. It's apple season after all. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. How are you?
There's no apples up here. We're in the high desert. But anyway, I'm fine. I'm ready to go. I'm very nervous, and I'm usually not nervous when I call you. But
really?
Go.
You're nervous?
Yeah, I've heard all this stuff, and I'm shaking in my flag chonies.
Okay, so should I give you an easy one or a hard one?
Okay, just go.
Okay, here we go. All right. When did all women get the right to vote?
Oh, that would have been 1919.
That is so close. The answer is 1920, but it was with that's okay, because it was with the 19th Amendment. So between it being the 19th Amendment and you're guessing just 1 year before 1920, I say, there we go. Well done, Rob.
Hey, Rob, my ear's ringing. Anyway, let's go. Let's go. Give me an avid.
All right, here we
get deported.
All right, here we go. Why did the U.S. enter the Vietnam War? Controversial question.
That was the Gulf of Tonkin.
What's that?
Gulf of Tonkin. Gulf of Tonkin.
Well, the answer that they give here at the Customs Service is to stop the spread of communism. So if I was the government here, I would have to say. However,
they wouldn't want to admit the starting of war, would they?
Yeah, no. So we're gonna go ahead and sort of give that to you.
Thanks.
Well, I'm generous that way. Let me get another one or two here before we go. What did the Emancipation Proclamation do, Rob?
Oh, where it stopped prohibition?
It was freed the slaves. It freed the slaves in the Confederacy. I know. Wow. Well, these are tough questions. Good thing you're already a U.S. citizen. Actually, are you already a U.S. citizen, Rob?
Well, check this out. Yes.
Are
yes,
you?
I am.
Are you?
But up
can I see, Rob?
I did have dual citizenship. So.
Okay.
But I live in California, so I kind of still do, don't I?
Rob, can I see your papers, please?
Which ones?
All right. I'm going to have to let you go. Watch out. ICE will be there in just a few minutes. Do we have time for one more? One more. Very quick. You all have been fantastic in this game show. Clearly, we need to have more of them here on the broadcast.
Oh, no.
Let's go to Dave. Yes, Dave. It's you. Are you ready for a question? Dave?
Yes.
Okay. Listen, James Madison is famous for many things. All you have to do is name one of them. Go.
Oh, gosh. Did he sign the Declaration of Independence? I'm not sure, but would that – I'm not sure if he did sign
that. Well,
I
got to say, he is not listed as having signed that. Father of the Constitution,
okay, so
we would have accepted. Fourth President of the United States, we would have accepted. President during the War of 1812, one of the writers of the Federalist Papers. So I'm sorry, Dave. You're not allowed to be a U.S.
Well,
citizen.
Well, good luck to the immigrants. Gosh, this is really tough, and we're Americans, and I feel a little bit red-faced here.
Well, at least you're not red-coated. In that case, we'd have to revolt against you. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate your our game. I appreciate everyone calling in to play our game. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for bearing with us as usual. As far as I'm concerned, you're all winners, citizens or not, just because you listen to the broadcast. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our soundboard operator today, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.